Yes, hello everyone and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer I'm bringing you all the news and interviews, everything to do with basketball in WA. It's a massive week for the Perth Wildcats. They've just qualified for finals and now they are preparing to retire former captain Damian Martin's prize number 53 jersey on Sunday at RAC Arena. It'll be a massive day where everyone gets down to celebrate what has been an outstanding career. And it's also a massive week for the Perth Lynx with their finals dreams on the line when they play Southside on Wednesday night. But this is a week where we celebrate Damian Martin, a six-time NBL champion, an NBL Grand Final MVP, and a six-time NBL Best Defensive Player. But none of that would have happened if the coach hadn't knocked on his door and told him to quit rugby league and come back to basketball. That coach is Rob Beveridge, and he's now on the line from Indonesia to talk about Damo's amazing career. Rob, welcome to Dribble Podcast.
Thanks. Very, very happy to be here. You know, Damo's one of my all-time greats, so favourite players, and love to chat about him. He's one of the best.
So as I mentioned, you're in Indonesia, but you are coming over for the ceremony. Tell us how your week's going to go.
Yeah, well, Indonesia in the league, we play all of January, but we've actually got February off, and because they've got their election, so they pretty much shut down the whole country. For the election, like, it's obviously 260 million people in this place, and so it's just what they do. And so we actually physically can't even train for about 10 days because they shut all stadiums, and I obviously don't know why, but they do. I think that I asked the question. They said, "Oh, because we have to concentrate." So, okay, yep, no worries. And then after that is the FIBA window. So we've got probably four of my staff in the national program, and then probably up to eight players in the squad as well. So then they go into camp for a period of time as well. So we got a little bit of a break, and a great opportunity for me to come back home. And I knew it was, I circled the date February 4 for Damo, and now he's been a massive part of my life. He's like a son to me. I've arranged for me to fly in very late on, or leave Saturday night, get in about 1 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, so I can be there.
That's awesome. Absolutely awesome that you'll be here. And you, as we said, you were the man who talked him into coming back to the sport. He played, and then he wanted to go to rugby league because of the challenges of the travel he was going through. You were in charge at the New South Wales Institute of Sport at the time. What made you think that I'm going to go and tell this guy, no, you have to play basketball again?
Yeah, look, I remember watching Damo just playing in some competitions in Newcastle and things like that, and just the way he moved, he was so quick and athletic, and as everybody knows, he's not a scorer, but he just had an X factor there, and so the way it pretty much happened was, I saw him there, and I rang him and his dad up. They're from a small town called Gloucester, up in the Hunter Valley, sort of inland from Newcastle, and so I rang and said, hey, I just want to catch up and chat and things like that. And ended up driving. I was in Sydney at the time, drove up to McDonald's at Raymond Terrace, and they drove 2 to 3 hours. And, so we had coffee and McDonald's, and pretty much painted a picture about my belief that he could be a national player. And, Damo was an exceptionally talented at anything he wanted. So if he wanted to have a rugby league career, he would have probably played for Australia as well. Rugby league, rugby union, AFL, cricket, doesn't matter. No matter what, he was just that gifted athlete and good at everything. And but all I did was just paint the picture about the Olympic Games and travelling the world and all of those types of things, which he could have done in rugby league as well. But obviously a blood sport, where he you know, probably would have got beaten up a whole lot more than what he did in his basketball career, which has been a lot as well.
He's had a fair few injuries. So, yeah, I can imagine what it would have been like if he was running around in rugby league. So did you believe that he was good enough to be a Boomer at that point, or did you look at him and say, well, no, we needed to get him back to the sport and he was going to be a really good player, but maybe not? Like, how do you sell that message? Do you have to go over the top, or did you genuinely think he's that damn good that he could play at that level?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was just a case to say, mate, no matter what you do, you're going to be, you're going to excel, and you've got to follow your passion. What do you love? And, he did. He loved his basketball, and I guess all I did was give him that belief that, if he continued to, work hard with his natural competitive spirit and, just his, his mentality of excelling, I just knew that he could be great. And he's a very humble person, and I think somebody to just pump his tires up a bit and push him to say, hey, you could legitimately be a professional player in basketball. And I think that was probably the biggest selling point. But it was about what do you want to do? No matter what you want to do, you're gonna be a pro at something. And anyway, he called back and said, no, I want to give this a shot. And that's when it all happened.
So I reeled off all of his stats at the start. The one thing I didn't reel off at that point was he's part of the Olympic team as well. So when you look at the six champions, the grand final MVP, the best defensive player, and then you throw the Olympics in on top, what do you reckon is the biggest accolade for him that you look back on? What's the moment which stands out in your mind and you go, I am so glad he came to basketball again because of this?
I think when I look at it, for him to make the Olympic team, like he and Kevin Lish, they were obviously with us at the time, and for them to get picked up, it was just unbelievable. And like that, he rang me. He got selected there in training camp, and he rang, and to be honest, I had tears in my eyes. Was so proud with what he achieved, because I mean, I'd been with him since his junior basketball, and he was the captain of every team that pretty much I ever coached. I coached him obviously with the under 20s, like the state team plus the national team, and then West Sydney and Spirit. Everywhere he went, he was my first pick. He was my leader. He was the heart and soul of the team. So for him to ring me up to say he's been selected for the Olympic team was it was a tear shed moment. I was just so proud of him and Kevin Lish that you can show that hard work actually does persevere, and he was recognised as a very important part of the Olympic team.
So not many coaches have this type of relationship with one of their players, where they're getting him back to the sport at Maccas and then coaching at state level, and then, as you said, West Sydney Razorbacks, Sydney Spirit, and into the Wildcats. Everywhere you went, he came with you. How do you maintain the coach relationship along with what's clearly a really strong bond with as a friend?
Yeah, it's I think it was just that relationship that. He was my other coach. He was the coach on the floor. And it was like, okay, well, I mean, on the sideline and, practice, I can control, as much as what I can. But then when it's in the heat of the moment, it's actually back on the players. And, we just had that sixth sense at times through just our relationship on and off the court that, something was there. We just had eye contact. We look at each other and we had that nonverbal communication and things like that. And he could just, he knew what I wanted, when I wanted it and things like that. So he definitely made it easier for me, as a coach. And I think it was just that relationship, if we respected each other and, He always wanted to do the right thing. Compliance the word, but whatever he needed to do to try and win, he would do it. And I think that was just the thing that was really very close with us. Just that bond for like a father son type thing.
You mentioned he's captaining everywhere you went, or everywhere he was with you. He was the skipper. Like, Well, leadership, it's amazing. You're either born with it or you learn it. Everyone has different theories around it. What made him, from such an early stage, a really great leader?
I think there's two types of leaders. There's action, those that just get and do it, and then there's the verbal. He was 100% action to start off with, but then as he grew up, he became more verbal. And nobody could deny what he wanted to say because he was the one that would always put his body on the line. You know, he was always picking the ball up, diving on the loose ball, going through, you know, off the court into walls, and you know, he'd just get up. You know, he had so many injuries. You know, I was with him when he snapped his Achilles. You know, I was with him when knee reconstructions. You know, all of those types of things. You know, you're with him. And just the professionalism, the way that, you know, zero complaints, just got on with it. And, it was just, that's how we led by action. But if he said something, nobody would ever question it because he was all action.
So you talk about diving for loose balls and going through brick walls. He went through you in a grand final series when you were the opposition coach. So we're out at Wollongong, Illawarra Hawks versus Perth Wildcats, 16-17 grand final series, loose ball near your bench, and he took you out. You were sitting down at the time, is my memory, but he barreled you and you both were lying on the ground next to each other and just laughing.
That was one of the funniest moments ever. But you know, he did. He went for the loose ball. He dived. I was sitting down on the chair. He's come straight over the top of me, barreled me over. But then what happened? My tie actually got stuck in the chair.
Of course,
so
it did.
I was trying to get up, and my tie was wedged, in the chair there. And he's trying to pick me up, but as he's trying to pick me up, my tie's choking me, type thing. And he's just looked at me, he's just laughed at me, and it was just a great. It was just one of those things where, he did. He pretty much landed on top of me, barreled me, ass overhead, tried to pick me up, and was choking me by the tie. And it was just gold. It was so funny. And I think a lot of people spoke about it afterwards, and just looked at me with a big smile, and he then left me, got up, and ran back on the court.
It certainly broke the tension of a grand final, didn't it? At that moment, it was like sports fun. As much as there's a lot of pressure, that relationships exist and sport is fun no matter what level you're playing at or how important the game is. What
made
his defensive eye different? There aren't too many people who can read a game defensively like he does. Yeah. What stood out to you is his ability to read when to go and when to hold back?
Yeah, look, I think that he always knew that he was a great on-ball defender. He's very long. Like, his wingspan is unbelievable. You know, he's got really big hands, quick hands. So his reach was something that gave him an advantage over people. So, yeah, he might be only 6'1" or whatever he might be. But he's probably got around a 6'7", 6'8" wingspan. You know, so he could use that length, and his foot speed was just incredible. You know, just his ability with his lateral movement to be able to get, in front of people, but use his wingspan to defend. So he was always good at that, and just because of his natural quickness was the thing. But again, just his instincts, like he could just read a play, and I think he just fitted perfectly into the way I wanted to play the game. You know, I like to pressure a lot. So whether he was on the ball or it was a Brad Robbins or Kevin Lish, or it doesn't matter, who it was. If he was off the ball, he had that knack. He knew that, okay, if we're trapping, he's going to get in the lanes and he's going to do things. But we always used him that, he was our best defensive player. He was the tagger. And I guess the other thing was that aerobically, he was as elite as I've ever seen in my life. That now you do the beep tests, you do the VO2 max tests and things like that. And I remember, pre-season that we were doing it, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but, most people drop out that, 15, 16, thereabouts. He was still going in the 20s. He was sprinting, doing the beep test, shuttle run, up and down, up and down, up and down. And it was just, he was like, came out of his aerobic capacity of a marathon runner.
That's unbelievable.
which is just amazing. That's what I'm saying. Like that, just that physical makeup that he had with his aerobic ability, which allowed him to play more. So, you know, we used to use heart rate monitors as well, and we'd watch him max out, and then all of a sudden, you know, there'd be a sub, and it dropped back to almost rest level. That he was at least like a freak. But, you know, his ability to play at a high intensity for a long period of time, that's why he played so long. You know, he just had that gift.
So when you, in the era that we're in now where everything's on social media and everyone wants to put their highlights tapes up, can you see anyone coming along with the same intent that he has to not necessarily be wanting to be the big scorer, but to want to impact the game in a different way and have such an integral role the way he did it? Can you see someone else being like him in the future?
The thing is, because of the way social media is and the way that the league's promoted, and you know, it's all about offense. Like everything these days being promoted offense. So if you look at this, you know, if I get an agent send me stuff, everything's about, oh yeah, they average, you know, 20 points and 6 assists and this and that, and blah blah blah. So if you sent Damian Martin stats, you know, oh geez, he averages 6 points a game and blah blah blah, people wouldn't even look at him. Wouldn't even, yeah, they go, oh, geez, we wouldn't look at it. But he would be the first person I'd ever pick at any team, and that's what I did, because he brings all those other intangibles to the game with, he stops a player that can score 20 points. You know, like he was put on the court to slow down Kevin Durant at the Olympic Games.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You know, go on. Yeah, and he's probably thinking, geez, who's this? And, you know, this 6'8", 6'9", superstar, you know, 6'1" guard that just, you know, wore him like a glove. But, you know, that's the what happens these days, is that it's all about, you know, the entertainment. It's about the dunks. It's about the threes. It's about all of those things. And unfortunately, people don't recognise defence probably the way that, you know, a lot of coaches actually do. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, basketball these days, it's an entertainment sport. People want to see, you know, the flashy stuff, all those things. So somebody like Damo, who is not flashy offensively, you could put a highlight tape together on him diving out of bounds and denying the ball and, you know, getting every possession. I call him, you know, he's the ultimate possession winner. You know, I remember at the World Championships back in 2003, he was one of the top 10 rebounders in the world as a guard, because he was so relentless with the way he would just get after it and things like that. But I think about, you know, nobody promotes defense whatsoever, and the way the game is blown these days with the refereeing, they want to protect offensive players and not let defensive players play. So I think Damo's probably finished his career at the right time.
Some players are admired, some players are loved, and some players are both, and he's one of in the both category, there's no doubt about it. What do you think it will be like on Sunday when his jersey is officially retired? What do you think? Yeah. There'll be a lot of love in the room, won't there?
Oh, it's going to be amazing. As I said, he's one of the most humble human beings you'd ever meet. He's probably, if you did a survey, he'd probably be the most likable player in the history of the league, like in this era. I mean, I can't talk for the 10, 12 years I was in the league. I don't think there was one person that could ever say a bad word against Damian Martin, because he's just so energetic and, you know, bubbly and things like that. You know, I've seen him cranky because I've spent so much time with him, but that's a rarity. Like, I don't think anybody's really seen him that cranky, because he's of who he is. And, he's just an amazing person. And I think Sunday is going to, you know, that's why I've got to come back for it. You know, 12, 13, 14,000 people at the stadium to appreciate Damo. I think it's going to be amazing.
As you mentioned, you are coaching over Indonesia. How's your group going? Tell everyone about the season you've had so far. I know it's very early in your year, so it's hard to sort of paint a really strong picture, but what's it been like so far?
Yeah, look, I've been actually blown away with the talent that's over here. That the IBL, the Indonesian Basketball League, the amount of money or resources that have been put into the league to promote it, that it's really getting pushed by FIBA in particular. As I mentioned, there's 260 million people in this country, and FIBA or basketball is trying to be, up there as one of the top sports. So the amount of the imports that are here. So there's 8 ex-NBA guys in the league, and they're good. Yeah, you know, I've got 3 ex-NBA players in my program. I've got 8 national players as well. So my team's loaded, and we're 100% the favourites. We're like the Wildcats or Melbourne United, Sydney Kings. You know, so we're the upper echelon in the league. So there's 13 teams all up. There's probably, I reckon, 5 or 6 that are very good. Very, very good teams that could compete against NBL teams. And then the bottom teams, they'd struggle. But I've been blown away with the talent of particularly the imports. There's about 6 foreign coaches over here as well. So obviously I'm the only Australian at the moment, but there's Spanish, there's, Serbian, there's South Americans, there's an English guy. So it's really taken off here. The stadiums are amazing. They're being sellouts every single game, where you can't hear a word. Like, we were on the road last week, could not hear anything in a timeout. It was just out of control. And we've had 2 home games and they've both been sellouts as well. So it's probably one of the boom leagues in the world. It's been amazing.
It's good. Good. Sounds like you're having a great experience. But everyone always asks over here, why aren't you in the NBL? I get it asked all the time. I know you've interviewed for many jobs over the years and recent seasons. Like, do you see yourself back here, or is it just timing not working out over different times in terms of the opportunities that may or may not have presented themselves?
Yeah, look, it would have to be a great opportunity back in Australia. I mean, I did it for so many years and things like that. My last experience at Illawarra Hawks was one of the worst experiences I've ever been involved in. And, I vowed back then, because of the lack of support from the league, the lack of support from a lot of people, it left me very, very bitter to be involved in the NBL again. And, I've had opportunities to go into New Zealand and then see this, that at the moment, I have no interest whatsoever, to get back in the NBL. At all. I mean, my whole family, we've all moved back to Perth because Perth has been the best place that I've ever been. I loved my days at the Wildcats. In hindsight, I probably should have never left. But at the time, it was the right decision to do it. In hindsight, I probably should have stayed, but, I moved on and things like that. So, I mean, I've had some, a great career and things like that, and thoroughly enjoying working internationally in a different market and watching this league grow and things like that. But at this stage, I've got no inclination to go back into the NBL. But the rest of the world is booming, and it's good to be part of it.
It was obviously a time when the Hawks were in danger of disappearing at different points. When you say lack of support, just not giving you the belief that there was going to be a club, or not helping you as a coach? Like, what were the problems at the time?
Oh, absolutely everything, like financially, all the things people don't hear about, where you don't get paid your salary for the best part of 5 months, the players don't get paid, the credit card bounces, when you're on the road, the players aren't getting paid. All of those things there, but there's still that expectation for us to turn up and try and put the best performance on. And at the end of the day, the lack of support from the management at the time was just not good. And the same with the league. The league didn't support us at the time, and it was very, very disappointing that all of us had to go through that. It was a very, very tough time, and that's why at that stage it was like, I can't believe that everything that we do, that we turn up and do our very, very best, and we get no support whatsoever from anyone.
Yeah, it's brutal. Absolutely brutal. Well, look, there's buzzing going on in the background where you are. You have to get to training, that's for sure. Yeah. So I appreciate your time. We look forward to seeing you here when you're here for Sunday. It's going to be a great occasion having Damien Martin's jersey retired. So thank you very much for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the game.
I really appreciate it, man. Super excited to get back to Perth.
So as I mentioned off the top, the Perth Lynx are well and truly in finals mode, even though they are still three games away from actually making the finals. They have struggled badly without Airey McDonald and are now 9-9 with three games remaining. Coach Ryan Petrick has always said you need to win 12 games to make the finals. So they have to win all three. And it starts on Wednesday night against the Southside Flyers. Flyers are in third spot on the ladder. And this poses a real challenge for the Lynx, who are still without Airey McDonald, their import. There had been some speculation last week that she was going to actually be rushed back for this game, but that's not the case. As she said on this podcast last week, she's not going to be back until after the FIBA break. So they've got one more game they've got to get through without her, and they have to win that match. There's obviously some challenges for them in terms of finding form and confidence, but they need to do everything possible because talk's cheap now. It's all about going out there and performing. So it's a 4:30 p.m. start Western Standard Time up against the Southside Flyers in an away game. It's now or never for the Lynx. So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Thank you to Rob Beveridge for his time. It's a big week for him having to coach and fly over here for the Damien Martin retirement jersey ceremony. So it's great to speak to him. Thank you to Josh Cable for his production work. Remember, you can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian and at thewest.com.au. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.